Welcome to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, hosted by Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements of Drab to Fab Landscaping. Garden Talk aims to introduce new ideas to help solve problems and keep you up to date on the latest development in the nursery and landscape industry. For a podcast of today's program and others, visit walteranderson.com and click on the podcast tab. Now, here's your host.
Good morning, San Diego. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson, along with George Allman. John Clements has the day off, and we will be here for the next hour talking to you about all kinds of stuff going on in your yard and garden. If you have a question for us, would like to comment on the show, or have a suggestion for a topic or guest you would like to hear about, you can email us at gardentalkradio@walteranderson.com or follow us on the Walter Anderson Nursery Facebook page. Good morning, George.
Good morning, Ken. How are you doing today?
I am doing well. I'm doing well. You know, I was just thinking about it before we came on the air. And what an incredibly nice summer we've had.
I think we have mentioned that before. It's been relatively mild.
It continues. Yes. Now I'm probably going to have to use it for the rest of the year. We have not turned on our air conditioner once this
year.
We never turn it on downstairs because the downstairs stays cool, but not even once have we had to turn the air conditioning on upstairs. It's been the weather conditions, I'm not going to say it's been cool, but the weather conditions have been perfect. If it's warm, there's enough of a breeze blowing through the house that we don't have to, it keeps everything comfortable. It's been one of the nicest summers that I can remember in quite a while.
It's been beautiful. The mornings have been great. We do a little Bible study in the morning on our front porch with our coffee, and it has been spectacular.
Just beautiful.
Every morning.
Yeah.
Even on the hot days, it's been nice. But that said, we have had the air conditioner on a few times, not for me because I like the heat, but I usually spend my time outside when the air conditioner goes on. But you can buy a new car with all the savings.
I could. Yeah. It's funny. I was in the warehouse just a day or two ago. And Chris, one of our other employees, came walking through, and it was hot. And he recently had just moved back here from Costa Rica, and we were talking about how, and it was really humid. It was when that monsoon moisture was coming through, and it was incredibly balmy up here, especially in the warehouse. And we were talking about it, I said this reminds me of Key West weather, and it really did, and it makes me want to go back. Although usually when I'm in Key West, I have an adult beverage with me.
Makes a difference.
Yeah. Which I don't do at work. Yeah,
I was chatting with Adams the other day when we had that heat and humidity here. Mm-hmm. And I was telling him how I like going outside and walking around. I had some computer stuff to do. So I was inside, and I'm trying to go outside like every 10 or 15 minutes. And he said, "You're the only one here that likes to be out in that."
Yeah. And when it was raining, I had a meeting down at the Maritime Museum, and it started raining. It was actually raining pretty good down at the Maritime Museum.
Oh, you had mentioned that, yeah.
When I left, and I had to walk from, Berkeley back over. I always park at the hotel just to make sure I got plenty of parking because the meters run out. And anyway, not going to go there. But I don't mind the walk down the Embarcadero, but I had to walk back to my car in the rain, and it was beautiful. I mean, it was nice. It was cool. You could smell that rain smell.
It was nice.
We really needed the rain. I mean, that was something that's been coming for a while.
I'm sorry. Did you get a measurement for your area?
I did not look at my rain gauge. I've heard some people say up to half an inch, but that seems awfully high.
That does. I guess it would depend obviously on what part of the county. Two different sites for where we live, we showed a little over a quarter inch.
Still a decent amount of rain.
That was good. I turned off the sprinklers that morning knowing, or I shouldn't say knowing because you never know, but expecting rain. And I'm glad I did.
Well, you know, the night that it rained, I woke up in the middle of the night. I could hear it raining outside. I had the windows open still because it wasn't pouring. But I could hear the rain coming down. And I thought to myself, okay, you get up in the morning, you make sure you put the sprinklers on delay with the Orbit Beehive system, all you have to delay the sprinklers, all you have to do is open up the app on your phone, hit a button, and it delays them. I woke up in the morning, thought, okay, better hit the delay, opened up the app, it had already done it. It tracks the weather through the internet. So it actually links up to the weather service to find out what the weather is in your specific area. And if it's rained, it will automatically delay your sprinklers. You can also hook up a rain sensor to the system that will monitor the rainfall that comes in too and make adjustments accordingly. The smart controllers are unbelievable. They are absolutely amazing. So yeah, I woke up when it had already set a 22-hour rain delay my input.
We had a show, maybe 4 weeks ago with Richard Restuccia.
Yes. And he just taught a class.
He just taught a class last weekend.
Yeah.
That was very well received on better watering.
Yeah.
And those smart meters can make, smart controllers can make a huge difference in your application rates and delays. And I guess the bottom line is that you save money.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And you know, I'm a big proponent of the Hunter MP, and we do not get any sponsorship money from them. This is just me. Right. The Hunter MP sprinklers, the rotating sprinklers, and the MP stands for measured precipitation. And when you set those things up, you're basically programming rain for your yard.
And how much rain you want.
And there's the MP8s, which is 0.8 of an inch an hour, and the MP4s, which is 0.4 of an inch an hour. And they come with, there's a ton of different variables as far as the heads are concerned. And it doesn't matter how big the coverage is that you're, because the radiuses can go from anywhere from, I think it's from 8 to 24 feet, so that you can cover huge areas. But it doesn't matter how big the area is, it still puts out the same amount of water over that area. So if it's 0.8 of an inch an hour, it's 0.8 of an inch over the entire area. So you can calculate more easily how much water you're putting down or how much water you need to put down.
As opposed to the more common sprayers that overlap and just, this spot gets 2.5 inches and this gets a quarter of an inch.
It just goes all over the place. Right. Yeah.
And this is all over the sidewalk.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So,
but they're a little bit more of an investment.
They are more expensive than the regular sprinklers. Yes. Right. And there are some areas where they don't fit well. Just because of the minimum radius, the shortest throw that you can get on an MP sprinkler is one of the side is they have three different side strip options. They have two, they have a right corner, a left corner, and a center. And the narrowest reach on those is 5 feet.
Okay.
So if you have like a 3 foot wide planting strip in your front yard, it's not going to work.
Right.
For the non strip ones, the minimum radius, I think there are some that will go down to 6 feet on the circular pattern. So they'll go down to either six or eight feet. So you are limited a little bit in that regard. But for bigger areas, which is where you're going to be putting the most water down anyway, they're tremendous. They are tremendous. So the weather's been great. So hopefully that will continue as we are heading into the autumnal equinox on Monday.
Monday at 11:19 California time.
11:19 Pacific Daylight Time, which I believe is 1:19 a.m. Greenwich time.
If you're tracking that,
or Universal time, depending on which.
We were just there. We stood at that prime
at the line.
At the line.
Did you jump back and forth?
We didn't. We didn't go in that spot. We stood outside and looked at it. Yes.
Yeah.
Oddly enough, it was raining there, but you know.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny for something so important on a global basis that it was just arbitrary line that they drew somewhere on the planet.
We said that while we were there. Capri said, you know, this is it. Everything's measured from right here.
That is it. And you know, the other thing that's really kind of amazing from a geometric standpoint, when you look at the prime meridian at Greenwich, and then you look at the size of the Earth in general, and then you break it down into nautical miles, which a nautical mile is 6,000 feet, as compared to 5,280 for a statute mile. But a nautical mile, you know, it breaks down perfectly into degrees, minutes, seconds, of arc, not of time.
Right.
But yep. I mean, it is, it's almost uncanny how close it is and how it works. It really is pretty amazing. So,
yeah. But that begins our official autumn. And
yes.
If you're in the Southern Hemisphere, spring begins.
If you're
in Australia,
that's true.
Spring starts.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. One of the, the first time my dad and I went down to New Zealand, we were down there in, it was in late November or December. It was in late November or early December. I can't remember which now. And we ended up way down south on the South Island in a town on the East Coast called Dunedin. It was a port city on the South Island. And it was the middle of their summer. I remember because there were Christmas decorations up all over the place. I thought I was going to freeze to death. It was the coldest I've ever been. It was unbelievably cold. But you know, you get down to Dunedin, you're getting down towards the roaring 40s down there, and it was really cold. But I remember it was interesting because it was the middle of summer and there were Christmas decorations out, and I was freezing.
It was cold enough for Christmas.
Yeah. But beautiful country. I highly recommend going to visit it. It's a absolutely amazing place. As we go into fall, some of the other stuff that's going on, probably one of the bigger things that's going on in the nursery and landscape business right now is going to be fall bulbs. And they have started coming in earnest, and there's going to be a good selection in both of our stores and in garden centers in general. Lots of stuff to talk about, and a few things that you might need to know going in if you want to plant bulbs in your yard. We will get into that in just a minute. We're going to take a break here on Garden Talk. We're going to be back with more right after this.
There's more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman. John Clements has a day off today. We do have garden classes today, September 20th, in both stores. In San Diego, it's going to be Staghorn Care and Remounting with Olivia. Always a popular class. That's going to be at 9 o'clock. I would get there early to get a good seat. And she's going to go over everything you need to know to keep staghorns alive and how to mount them. All of their care, for the most part, for the staghorns that we have in cultivation around here, super easy to take care of. There's really no mystery to them. If anything, people baby them to death.
As long as you don't put them in full sun,
they're
an easy plant.
Yeah, the really complicated ones like Coronarium and some of the other off varieties that have really strange cultural requirements. Those are not really they're not readily available, and they're not easy to grow, so they're not popular. but the popular varieties that are out there are super easy to take care of, and very easy to remount once you know what you're doing. And we have all the supplies in it. She's going to show you what you need to do. And we have all the supplies if you want to do it yourself. Or you can just go into the class. You'll figure out what you need to do. And you can make up the mounts that you need yourself.
And if you can't make that class, there'll be one at the Poway store in November.
In November. Okay. And we will remind everybody of that when that comes up as well. At 9:30 today in Poway, it's going to be Common Pests of Backyard Trees with certified arborist Pedro Berry, who's also been a guest on the show before. So he's going to be going over all kinds of bugs and things that can affect trees that you have in your yard.
And Pedro was scheduled earlier this year for a class that he had to miss because of a tree emergency.
That's right.
But he'll be here tomorrow. And he did a class here before that was very well received as well. And he's active on the San Diego Gardener Facebook page that John Clements and Nan Sturman moderate.
Yeah.
Very active in there.
Yeah. Very interesting guy. So that should be a very good class. That's going to be at 9:30 in the Poway store. Once again, get here early to get a good seat and get a cup of coffee and enjoy the class. Before we went into the break, we were talking about fall in general and how this is the time that it's kind of a misnomer. We refer to them in the business as fall bulbs, but they're fall bulbs because you buy them in fall, but they bloom in the springtime or later in the season. And the ones that you typically see, right, the most common ones that you see right now are going to be tulips, ranunculus, crocus,
daffodils,
narcissus,
spider lilies.
Yeah, this is the time that those start coming in, and this is the time that you start picking them up and getting them in the ground, with a couple of exceptions. Tulips, hyacinths, and some crocus require pre-chilling. So for pre-chilling, you want to put them into a air permeable bag, paper bag. The packaging that we sell them in is air permeable. It's a plastic bag, but it does have holes in them. Right. You don't want to put them into an unventilated plastic bag.
They will rot.
Put them into your refrigerator, not your freezer, your refrigerator, for about 4 to 6 weeks, just to give them a little bit of a chill. And what that does is it kickstarts them into their blooming cycle when you do put them out. So you have to plan a little bit ahead to get things going. But that's typically just for tulips, hyacinths, and some of the crocus. The crocus sativus, the
saffron.
Saffron. Thank you. Right. That name, crocus, don't require the chill. And for those of you that like growing your own culinary herbs, you can grow your own saffron. And you can save yourself some money. I think at one time it may still be the most expensive spice on the planet by weight.
Tiny little pieces. Yes.
Yeah. It's a job.
You can save money, but it's tedious.
As most edible gardening is.
You know, now that I say that out loud and heard it through my own ears, I agree. I made pesto once. I think I shared this on the radio before. With a pine tree. Mm-hmm. With pine, I took the pine nuts out. That mm-hmm. unto itself was,
I've heard that's a nightmare.
It was difficult, and you're tarry, the resin all over your hands to do it. But I did it, and that was tedious. But to your point, that's culinary from the garden. It can be.
You are in control.
That's right.
You are the master of your domain there. So get your bulbs in now, or get your bulbs now. Get the ones that require it. Tulips, hyacinths, and crocus into the refrigerator for 4 to 6 weeks, and then get ready to plant those out. Another tip when you're planting bulbs is some people make the mistake for their first time planting, where they come through and they plant ones and twos or twos and threes of bulbs. Bulbs need to be planted en masse. You need to plant a bunch of them at one time to really get. And when you look at pictures of the flower fields, or you look at pictures of the bulb fields over in Holland, they're masses of color. They're unbelievable masses of color. We went back to visit my daughter in North Carolina a couple of years ago in the springtime, and she has a big planter in her front yard. It's a raised planter. It's probably about 5 by 10 feet, maybe 6 by 12 feet. And when we got to her house, it was solid tulips. I mean, solid. There was no gap in it at all. And it was absolutely stunning. The color and all of it in bloom at the same time. It is, when you plant them in mass, it really makes a statement, and they really look fantastic.
Now, a number of the bulbs that you mentioned will naturalize.
Yes.
And so you put a 5 or 6 or 10 in a spot, and over time it will just become a larger plot of those. And narcissus, the daffodils do really well with that.
Yeah, narcissus and daffodils are some of the most common, probably the most popular, most common daffodil that we sell is technically it's the King Alfred type, which is a big yellow daffodil. The true King Alfreds, I don't think are currently available, but we sell what is termed a King Alfred type, big yellow single flower daffodil. You can plant those, and if you have a if you have beds in your yard that you put seasonal color in, or you know, you put in pansies in the spring or in the fall, change it out with petunias in the summertime, things like that. You can plant those daffodils and also a lot of narcissus. Paper whites are the most popular, the most popular narcissus that we sell. You can plant a lot of those down around 10 to 12 inches deep in your yard. And if you have good, well-drained soil, they will stay there and they will, they'll usually be the first spring flowers that you'll see coming up in the spring, and they will push through whatever annuals that you have planted there. It's not going to hurt the annuals, but they will come up through pansies later in the season. They'll come up through petunias if you put petunias out early, and they come back year after year after year. I had some in a planter in my, as a matter of fact, I think I'm going to replant a bunch in one of the planters in my backyard, but they were some of the first flowers that would come up in the spring. And later in the spring, when things really start to warm up in the mountains, if you go up to Julian, they love King Alfred daffodils in Julian, and you will be amazed at how many daffodils are in and around the Julian area. They used to come in. I don't remember what organization it was. There was a civic organization up in Julian that buy King Alfred daffodils from us by the bag.
Back when you sold large bags.
When we stocked them in large bags, I'm talking like a 30 or 40 pound bag of daffodil bulbs. And they would come in and buy bags and bags and bags of those and take them up to Julian every year and plant them out throughout the area. And when you go up in the springtime, there's literally tens of thousands of daffodils in bloom all over the place, along the side of the road and the parks, everywhere. It is really something to see.
It's gorgeous when they're in mass.
Yeah, they have really embraced the King Alfred daffodils in Julian. If you want to force bulbs, there's really only a couple that do well forcing. Those are going to be the hyacinths and paper whites. And
amaryllis, right?
And amaryllis too. Yeah.
And we get a lot of those as we get closer to Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Thanksgiving and Christmas is when they become popular, when their popularity really starts to come in. But paper whites and hyacinths, those are really easy to force. You can either force them in containers, and bulb trays, or you can even in the, bulb vases, are designed specifically for forcing individual bulbs.
But speaking of paper whites, some people feel that smell, the scent can be overpowering. It's like a burnt plastic if it's too much.
It's like cilantro. Some people love the fragrance of it and some people can't stand it.
I like it, but I do know that when you bring them inside or if you were to force them, if you have too many, it can certainly overpower a room.
Yeah, I'm non-committal on it. It doesn't bother me. It's not one of my favorite fragrances, but it certainly doesn't bother me. Another plant that's in that category is stock.
I like stock. I was just chatting with one of our coworkers here yesterday about it.
It's a nice plant. It's been around forever. It's a perennial favorite. It's an annual perennial favorite.
They sell so nicely.
Yeah. But some people just can't stand the smell.
It's very clove-like.
It's different. Yep. Yeah. It's that's a good way to describe it. I happen to like the smell of stocks.
I do too. And I didn't put any seeds in and I went out to purchase some yesterday and we only have them in the 4-inch containers. I was looking for some 6-packs. So when we get them in 6-packs, I'll be getting some.
Yeah. I have to plant some up. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman. We're going to take a quick break and we're going to be back with more right after this.
There's more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman. And lo and behold, John Clemens has decided to join us today and is not taking the day off. Welcome, John.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
Glad you could make it. I'm sorry that
you were
sorry what had kept you out of the first couple of segments, but we're glad you're here.
Rumors of my demise have been greatly exaggerated.
Apparently so. Well, while you were gone, we touched on a couple of different things. The last topic that we were talking about was fall bulbs and the ones you plant now for spring color, the ones that you want to chill, pre-chill, tulips, hyacinths, crocus, things like that. And the ones that can naturalize. Typically I didn't even mention bearded iris, but we didn't get bearded iris
not
this
yet.
Year,
yeah,
which is very, very late. So I don't know. I'll have to look and see if we're even going to get any this year.
But they naturalize
well. Daffodils, narcissus, those all naturalize really well.
And freesias and
forgot about the freesias
and
anemones.
Yeah.
But you know, we were talking about the smell. What do you think of the scent of the paper whites? Is it overpowering to you or do you like it?
It's repellent.
You don't like it? Okay. Yeah. So you have the Ken Beat gene for that.
Okay. Yeah.
Although I like beets. So we must have conflicting genes.
Yeah. Okay. So then that brought up the issue of the fragrance of stocks.
I love the smell of stocks.
There we go.
It's all over the board, and it can go. It can go either way.
So, yep.
One of the bulbs that's been missing from the lineup for the last at least one or two seasons.
I was going to say three.
Maybe three seasons.
Yeah, we haven't been able to get. Yeah, get them.
Watsonias.
Yep.
Super easy to grow. Mm-hmm. I mean, a perennial favorite. Can typically pink, white, and red. Haven't been able to get them at all. Mm. And our suppliers have not grown them. I know I've spent time doing it. I know James has spent time doing it, searching the internet, trying to find anywhere in the world somebody who's growing Watsonias, and there's no wholesalers available. You can find some people that have Watsonia seed online, but that's not what our customers are looking for. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're.
I would think we could find us. Well, I don't know if they could do it, but South Africa, where they're from, we might be able to find a source there. Could, but
you can't get.
We could not find anything. However, according to one of our suppliers, they should have a source for them next year.
Wow.
So if they do, and we get Watsonias in, if you want to make sure you have Watsonias, put them somewhere in your yard where you can let them naturalize and they will keep coming back and they will reseed and come up year after year.
One of our customers here has some on her property and a couple years ago, she was kind enough to bring some in for me. And I planted a couple and the rest I kept in that bag in the garage where they became just
dust.
Dried powder.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I kick myself for that.
Yeah. I can't tell you how many bulbs have gone home with good intentions and ended up just a mummified mess in a paper bag in my garage.
I shudder to think. Yeah.
One thing to bear in mind, always the plant societies, when we can't get things in a commercial level.
That's true.
A lot of times, you know, in fact, it was on Walter Anderson Garden Talk 2 years ago, I think. Y'all mentioned that they were having the iris sale at Balboa Park.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I went there and nobody was there. There were three beautiful, probably 85-year-old ladies there selling. But I just felt like I had such a score because they had so many neat plants that I can't find. And I spent a lot of money that day. And so, you know, sometimes those sources are really great. Just bear in mind, for instance, at the Cactus and Succulent Society sales, oftentimes Ken Blackford will sell South African bulbs that you cannot find anywhere. Biophany and Amerigias and just great stuff and for a good price too. And so folks, go to the Balboa Park Plant Club sales because you'll find stuff that we can't get.
That is true.
Right now.
And just about every, and you know, if you want to see what's coming up, I can't think of it.
We've posted it on our Facebook page in the past. I'll repost it later today.
The Botanical Garden Foundation.
Right.
They post they post all the upcoming plant society shows. They're always in Balboa Park. They're always in the Casa del Prado
Is it room 101?
101 or one of those 100 rooms. But usually every one of those shows will have plants for sale from members of the group. So if you're looking for interesting and unusual stuff, that is an outstanding way to find it, because there are people out there that have some really, really neat stuff that you are not going to source from your typical garden center. I mean, we are always on the lookout for interesting, rare, unusual stuff. It's something that we've always been known for, and we try to keep at it as much as possible, although those sources are sadly dwindling as time goes on. But we do keep an eye out for those things. So, but the collectors are the ones that have the really neat stuff. That's the big orchid show every year. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was like a WWF match at the sale. I mean, people would line up outside the sales hall door, and it was just a mad rush in there. And the vendors in there were just selling stuff hand over fist. They couldn't sell it fast enough. It was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. But the stuff you'll find there, though, is truly incredible. But there again, though, if you're going to do that, I would try to get there earlier than later, because we're not the only ones that realize that that's where you're going to get some of that stuff, and people will go there and buy it.
And we've had, over the years of doing the show, we've had a number of the folks that were going to be there, whatever society it is, carnivorous or, you know, irises or orchids, would call in and talk a little bit about what they would have available and what they were selling. Mm-hmm. And that is the San Diego Botanical Garden Foundation. And it's sdbgf.org.
Yeah.
And I will put that on our website. I mean, on our Facebook page later today.
Yeah. Not to be confused with the San Diego Botanical Garden.
No, Garden Foundation.
Yeah. Another great source for Plant Society information, and probably just a great resource for gardening enthusiasts in San Diego, California Garden Magazine, published by the San Diego Floral Association, for over 100 years.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's been a...
Back to Kate Sessions.
Yeah. It's been a mainstay. And was it Rosecroft?
It was. Yeah. Yeah. That was Alfred Robinson.
Rosecroft
Begonia Gardens.
Rosecroft Begonia Gardens. That's an outstanding resource for local gardening and horticultural information. You know, talking about Rosecroft Gardens, there's the estate was out on Point Loma. As a matter of fact, Rosecroft Lane is still there. And I remember as a much younger person in this business, going out to Point Loma on deliveries and going down Rosecroft Lane. And there was an adobe wall along one side of the property, and it had windows isn't the proper term, but it had openings in the wall. And I remember that, but I don't think I ever went there when Rosecroft Gardens was still open. My dad remembers it, and I can't remember. There was a woman that was running Rosecroft Gardens.
Catherine Hunter.
Is that who it was?
Yeah, Catherine Hunter owned it, and she was the mother of Jerry Hunter.
Jerry Hunter, okay.
Who owned Rancho Soledad Nurseries.
Rancho Soledad Nurseries, yeah. That's all starting to make sense now. Yeah. My dad has memories of that, but I don't. And is the Robinson house still out
it
there?
It is. It's still
the
there.
Mansion?
Yeah,
it was still a big, there. I don't think I've ever been there.
It's beautiful. Yeah.
You know, and speaking of Robinson, different family, I'm pretty sure. And it's one of the places that I've been trying to go to up in LA. I think it's in the Beverly Hills area, the Robinson Estate in LA. It's only open for guided tours, and you have to book in advance and make your reservations in advance. It's the estate of the family that started Robinson's department stores.
Oh my.
And they have a spectacular place up there, and just beautiful gardens. It's on my bucket list of things to do. Mm. There's some really neat stuff in LA. Mm-hmm. When you go up there and start poking around, there's some really neat stuff up there.
There are a lot of gardens to be seen.
There are. Yeah. Some, you know, the probably the
premier.
Biggest one, the premier one, mm-hmm. I would say is probably Huntington.
Yeah.
LA Arboretum is spectacular.
Really nice. We did that recently, as you know, and that, we need to get up there for some others. Mm.
Yep. Yeah, you can go see the Fantasy Island house.
We did. Yeah. We got pictures at the Arboretum. The plane.
Yeah. The other one, the other big one up there that I have not been to yet is Descanso Gardens.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Which I've heard very is nice. Amazing. I'm going to have to make a point of putting that on the calendar for late winter, early spring to go up and see the camellias.
I think what we need to do is use AI to go back through every single audio of that we have done and recorded in the last, I've been doing this for 7-8 years, how many times we've mentioned Descanso Gardens and how we need to go up there.
We're
going to take a field trip and we're going to do it one of these days. And I'm thinking we probably said it 12 to 15 times since we've been doing this. And yet here we sit and have not been there.
Still have not gone up there. But the Robinson Garden is one that I really want to see. One of the other ones that's really neat, and the yard, the gardens are open a fair amount of time. Getting into the building is much more problematic just because it's so busy for filming schedule. Greystone Mansion. The Doheny Mansion.
Doheny.
right in the middle of Beverly Hills. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable place. They used to do a car show up there every year, the Beverly Hills Concourse to Elegance. And it was a great, Millie and I would go every year. It was a great show. It was a lot of fun. You couldn't drive up to the estate though. You had to catch a shuttle bus to get up there. But Greystone Manor Greystone Mansion. I can't remember which one it is. In Beverly Hills, it's a bucket list must see thing. Mm. It is truly, truly amazing. The old Doheny Estate. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson, along with George Allman and John Clements. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to be back with more right after this.
There's more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements. We were talking about some of the estates up in the Los Angeles, Beverly Hills area. And, you know, the area of San Diego that has some pretty big estates around is Rancho Santa Fe. And I don't think a lot of people realize this, but Rancho Santa Fe was basically established by the railroad, by the Santa Fe Railroad. And they started selling off estate-sized parcels of property, and they were encouraging people to plant citrus orchards on. It's a really interesting story. They were selling off the property that they owned, encouraging people to plant citrus orchards. Then they were contracting with the people that were growing the citrus orchards to move the citrus out of San Diego via the railway. It was kind of like a self-licking ice cream cone that they came up with there. It was really interesting. And I can't remember the woman who laid out Rancho Santa Fe and did a lot of the architecture for the actual village. Do you remember?
Lillian Rice?
Lillian Rice.
Yeah.
Melanie and I went to a presentation by a Rancho Santa Fe historian in Rancho Santa Fe one time, and then we did a walking tour of the village. Fascinating. Mm-hmm. It was really, really interesting. It's a really good story. And Lillian Rice was a very accomplished architect and did some really incredible work.
Beautiful places.
And as property values have increased, though, unfortunately, the value of the citrus crops up there has dropped dramatically over the years, and areas that used to be just absolutely beautiful, lush citrus groves are falling into a state of
disrepair
not being cared for the way they used to. Melanie and I had driven through Rancho Santa Fe just a few weeks ago, and as we were driving through, I was telling her about the areas, and I said, you know, I remember 20, 30 years ago, these areas were just amazing, just absolutely spectacular. And now they're just a shadow of what they used to be, unfortunately. But there's been a lot, not only the land value and things like that, and the change in agricultural commodities in San Diego County, but the quarantine has caused all kinds of havoc in the citrus industry and in California, not nearly as bad as it did back in Florida, where it nearly wiped out the citrus industry. But the HLB quarantine in California has really changed the landscape as far as citrus culture is concerned, not just on a commercial basis, but on a homeowner basis as well. Right. And it was just within the past couple of weeks, the California Department of Agriculture expanded the quarantine area, mostly over towards the coast.
Yeah, northern San Diego County by Camp Pendleton,
up in that area. But that quarantine zone is here. As a matter of fact, the Poway store is right on the edge of it. And the last quarantine map that I looked at, Poway Road was basically the northern demarcation of it in our area.
Right.
So we're getting extremely close to the quarantine zone. We can still sell citrus here in Poway, but we have to take some great care to make sure that, you know, obviously everything that we buy in is treated for citrus psyllid. You can't buy citrus in California that has not been treated legally. And I don't encourage people to illegally purchase citrus,
which is how we got here,
first place. But there are some areas, some institutions I know, Home Depot in Carmel Mountain, Melanie and I had been up there just recently, and they have no citrus for sale, but they are smack in the middle of the quarantine zone. I have a feeling the Lowe's on Poway Road is in the quarantine zone. So I have not been in there to look, but I would imagine they are no longer selling citrus. Mm-hmm. Same thing I would say is probably true with the Armstrong over in Peñasquitos. Mm-hmm. We still are able to sell citrus for the time being. But we are taking extra precautions to try to keep the spread to a minimum. Consequently, in both of our stores now, citrus sales are final. Once it leaves the store, we can't take it back. So if you're considering planting citrus, and I highly encourage people to plant citrus, just make sure you're going down a path you want to go down, because we are not taking them back. The other thing that we are asking people to do, if you have a citrus malady, please don't bring it into the store. Take as many pictures as you want, as close-ups, overall shots, whatever you think we're going to need to take a look at, take photos of it and bring it in, and we are happy to look at it and give you advice on what to do. But please try to refrain from bringing actual citrus samples into the store, because we are desperately trying to keep the
HLB
at bay as much as we possibly can. So we do appreciate your cooperation in that, and we will help you out however we can, but it's a serious matter. And I have a feeling if the quarantine in the Poway area moves any farther south, our store in Poway is going to be enveloped into that. And I hate to say it, but I said that's going to be the end of citrus sales in our store
If it makes it here, then it's just a matter of time before anything south of here
will
also be shutting down.
There's going to have to be a major shift in the control of HLB, or a major breakthrough that they have yet to. They're making small inroads on it, but nothing, no game changers at this point. But that's what it's going to take to keep things going.
And that said, as a citrus expert, can I just encourage people, if you have citrus at home, please care for them properly, because you'll find that your citrus trees, if they are under stress and if they're already imperiled by other pests, it makes them much more prone to getting more infestations of things. It's like if you have a citrus tree that's declining and you're not caring for it well, not watering it, not feeding it, it's just languishing. it's like ringing a dinner bell for every nasty pest around. And they literally can smell that and come after these trees. So take care, good care of your citrus. Make sure you're applying horticulture oil in the winter. I do 3 applications now in the winter. I just, as a matter just of at least, it. Just do
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
Take good care of them.
Yeah. Just, yeah. Take the lead on it. Yeah. Stay ahead of it because you, I can almost guarantee you, you're going to have aphids, whitefly, mm-hmm. aphids, whitefly or scale on your citrus.
And citrus leaf miner.
And citrus leaf miner. Yeah. And that's where you, it doesn't hurt to keep some spinosad on hand mm-hmm. because that's the one that you want to use for the citrus leaf miner.
And the state and UC Riverside and their science side of the house where they're doing all the research, they're big advocates. If you don't want that citrus tree,
take it out.
You don't want to deal with it, cut it down, get rid of it.
Get rid of it.
Because it's going to become a vector for HLB.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know, and along that line, when you go through some of the backcountry areas in San Diego and you see the demise of some of those citrus groves, they're still alive, but they're barely hanging
on.
That needs to go. Yeah. They either need to step it up and start taking care of them mm-hmm. or take them out because it's just going to exacerbate and mm-hmm. continue the problem down the road. Earlier in the show, we were talking about the rain that we had, the recent rains that we had had, which was incredibly nice, a nice break. But the water that comes with the rain also brings other issues. West Nile virus was recently noted in San Diego, transmitted by mosquitoes. And I've noticed mosquito activity in my yard. they're out
us
there.
Too.
So, but when it rains, that creates all kinds of places for them to breed that you may not even be thinking about in your yard. So watch out for standing water. If you can drain the standing water, if it's in a bucket or some reason you are hoarding unmounted tires in your yard, those are places that you might not think about it, but they will catch water and they will. It doesn't take much for mosquitoes to start breeding.
We were talking about that on the break. There's one of the more recent arrivals here. They breed in like a thimble full of water. They don't need a lot.
Yeah, they don't need much.
It's the Aedes, and that's the one that's the ankle biter. And and they're terrible. And they only need a quarter inch of water.
Yeah.
And people have, you may not know this, but you probably have it on, if you're an avid pot gardener, not pot cannabis, container, let me rephrase
a saucer
it.
Under
if you're
your
a
saucer.
Container gardener and you have a saucer underneath, that's enough. If it's a larger saucer that contains water, that's enough to let these breed in there.
Or a bird bath.
Bird baths.
Mm-hmm. Bird bath.
I like to think the birds are doing their job and eating all of the larvae.
Typically with water features like waterfalls and streams and things like that, I think the movement of the water is enough to usually deter them from laying their eggs. I have heard that moving water will do that, but any kind of still water, you mm-hmm. definitely want to watch out for. Before we went on the air, George and I, when we were talking about what we were going to talk about, one of the things that I said, I have a couple of 5-gallon paint buckets I keep in my yard just for maintenance. They're easy to grab, carry around, load them up with stuff when you're weeding or trimming or whatever, and then dump them out. At least one of them I've drilled about 5/8-inch holes in the bottom of it mm-hmm. so that if I don't turn it upside down, if it rains, the water drains out of it. It's still mm-hmm. perfectly useful for everything that I'm going to do except mm-hmm. hauling water. But those are the types of things that you can watch out for. And also
the San Diego County Vector Control offers free mosquito fish. If you happen to have a pond mm-hmm. or you're growing water plants, that you can get free fish from them. And they have a number of sources throughout San Diego. Walter Anderson Poway does not stock them, but our store downtown in San Diego does. So if you go on to the San Diego County Vector Control Program, you can get a list of all the different places you can get mosquito fish.
Yeah, they're very easy to grow, mm-hmm, very easy to care for, and they will do quite well. The other thing to look out for too, or to use, is mosquito dunks, which is the biological. It's a BT biological control, and you basically just throw them into your pond or wherever you have it. The mosquito bits, which is basically chunks of mosquito dunks, work extremely well for fungus gnats on your houseplants as well.
As well, yes. So,
Yeah. So watch out for that.
And in the cups of your bromeliads too.
Yes. Yes. They will inhabit those as well. So keep an eye out for those. You've been listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Kane Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements. We'll be back next week with another hour of Garden Talk. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, independent and family-owned since 1928. For more information about plants, products, expert advice, news, classes, podcasts, and more, visit walteranderson.com.